Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Are you serious?
This is How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Bronzy.
And my name is producer Bill.
What's going on, Bill? You're right, mate.
I'm not too bad.
Good stuff. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there, so it's our job to try it and let you know about it, and also kill some time with some familiar faces. On today's show, it's James Haskell. We're going to press play on the interview that we had with him in just a moment. I think it's time that we dig into a killer bit where we talk about something that we killed some time with. It's an unpaid review. I just want to put it out there because a lot of people are like, you try out so much stuff. Are you getting paid? Is this a legit review? If it's commercial content and branded content, I think we'll be sure to let people know. Is that right, Bill?
Hashtag ad. But this one is not.
Hashtag ad. I got a car, Bill, to drive. It was a Lexus UX self-charging hybrid, which means it doesn't need to be plugged in. No plugs. No diesel, no compromise. That's their catchphrase. So basically, at the moment, we're in this interesting time where cars are transitioning into fully electric vehicles, right? So there's one side where there's fully electric vehicles where there's not, I'd say, the best performance in terms of mileage and output. And then on the other side, you've got really unhealthy cars which are destroying the environment that we live in. So Lexus are kind of helping us to gradually move over into a world where we don't need to have as much petrol or diesel, well, no diesel on this, used when you're using a vehicle. So the UX is that indeed. It's a self-charging hybrid. Now, how it works is it's got a bit of a bigger battery in it than a usual hybrid. It's really, really good at taking power from the wheels and self-charging the hybrid battery. And that means when you're doing little under 20 mile an hour journeys, I'd say mostly, or little whips around town, it means that you're not using any fuel at all. You're just using energy. And it charges from the brakes, it charges from the movement of the wheels. And that's it really, in a nutshell, Bill.
So does this one, it says hybrid, this one takes petrol.
Mm-hmm. So you put it, when you go to the petrol station, to be clear, really good question, you put petrol in it. That's what you put in it. You don't ever plug it into a wall. There are cars that you plug into a wall, but with this, you do not.
Generally with hybrids, I was under the impression that once your petrol runs out, you run on the electric.
And now what this does is, think about it. That's another good question, because if your petrol runs out first, it means you use all of the petrol, mess up the environment, then use your electricity after. Whereas this uses the electricity first. So say I'm going downhill and I'm not using that much energy to push myself forward. It will use the electricity to do that. Furthermore, if I start braking, it will start charging up the electric battery even more. So that when I pull away again at traffic lights, I'm not using any fuel whatsoever. But if I do need to put my foot down on the motorway, something that isn't as easy to get kind of good traction and torque out of an electric vehicle at the moment, it will slowly shift into using the petrol. It'll even use a bit of both. It will use as much electricity as possible.
So it'll be a long time before you need to really fill up again.
Well, do you want to hear my story about how much mileage I got out of it? Well, for starters, The car I drove beforehand was a really loud, like V8 5-liter engine, right? Not very good for the environment, I know. So when I first got in this, I pressed start and it was ready to go, but I was expecting to hear an engine noise because I'm not used to driving EVs. So I was like, what the fuck? What's going on, bruv? What's going on? And there was a very clear signage saying the car is ready to drive, but I was waiting for that kind of But it wasn't there because it's just ready to take off. So about seven long minutes, I'm looking around trying to find manuals and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, no, it's good to go. So I drove it around town, like locally, just like shops up the road to my mates, being really careful. It's got a really good heads up display that lets you know when you're using electric and when you're using petrol or when you're using a combination of both. So I drove it around town and I felt like I was really unsure whether it was one of those petrol gauges that kind of was going to drop from full to halfway, because it literally didn't go down for like the first 5 days. That was only nipping around town. It was like, I think I did about 70 miles on it and it was still at a full tank because I wasn't really using much gas at all. I was just using the electric battery. And also what you can do on this as well, there's a button that you can press and put it into full electric vehicle mode where it will not rely, it won't transition into the petrol if you charge up the hybrid enough. Now, for the first few days I had it, because I was only doing little nippy journeys, I hadn't charged it up enough. But when I took it on a road trip, I drove up to Preston and back again. I found that on my way there, driving on the motorway, yes, I did start to use fuel. I'd actually charged up the electric battery enough so that I could flick it into EV mode. Mm. When I landed in Preston, I could drive around for the next 10, 15 minutes, not using any fuel at all. And did a gig, drove back. And just when I got home, I needed to fill up the tank a little bit, obviously, for the guy that was taking it back. But I managed to get 600, and I've taken, actually, I've got pictures, actually, of the dash. Let's whip this out so I can tell you no lies. On the way back, I had 600 miles on the dash.
What, 600 miles is what you've driven?
I'd driven 600 miles on a full tank, including little nippy trips around town and one big motorway
journey. And how much had left? Half tank?
No, that was a whole tank. Done.
All gone.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it is really, really good. And I was really impressed. And in terms of a Lexus, I don't know if you've been, have you been inside many Lexuses?
No, not really, no.
It's like a spaceship, bruv. It's like not a low, it's not a lo-fi car at all, by any means. It's got like a adjustable heads-up display on the dash. And then it also projects onto the windscreen. So you can see stuff.
That's good.
Like augmented reality. So you can keep your eyes up on the road and still know when your car's, what speed it's doing, whether it's in EV mode or not. It's got a special, if you put your hand in the air and face your palm away from you and then put it on your thigh, shout out to you if you're doing this on the train and everyone's looking at you weird. It's got a handset, like a navigation set on the armrest area that fits your hand perfectly. So there's a button under your thumb, a button under each of your fingers, and you can use that to kind of navigate the menu as you drive, which is really nice. You don't have to lift up your hand and use the touchscreen display. The one we had levers on the inside, which were quite nice. Aircon was lovely. Sound system was pretty decent. Pretty minimalistic display, but you would have to sit there and press all the buttons, and I missed the press all the buttons. So like I pressed every single button to find out how everything worked. And it's got a really customizable display just to the left of the dashboard where your usual kind of display is in cars nowadays. It's got a really customizable display so you can kind of have information about your journey. You can even have like a split screen map on your journey as well, which shows a bit more of certain parts of your journey than others. Yeah, and that was the inside of the car.
It all sounds very good, especially at 600 miles.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Not bad at all. And the outside of the car, yeah, we had a white one. It looked kind of cool. Like Lexuses are quite, they're quite edgy looking cars, aren't they? Like they kind of got sharp lines on them and stuff. It's kind of that look again. It looked really nice, man. It's kind of a vehicle. The UX is no coupe. It's a 5-door space for a couple of mates in the back, you in the front. Pretty high up as well, which I liked as well. Like, because I'm a tall lad, so like sports cars and stuff, like, they look cool to people, like, but for me, getting in and out of a sports car definitely requires some like commando rolling. So yeah, it's kind of, it looks like, it is not, but it looks like a kind of 4x4. Do you know what I mean? Like a small one, like a compact.
Compact
SUV. So yeah, that was it, man. I had a really good ride in it. And we got any other questions about it, Bill?
No, not particularly. Not as far as I'm aware just yet. You got a price?
Oh yeah, I think it starts from 30 grand. The vehicle we had was the F Sport. So if you put your foot down, it could move. So I think that's about 40K. So there's room between that in terms of customizables that you want. I must say though, because I'm a sucker for like trying to get the best juice out of stuff, I didn't really want to put my foot down too much. In fact, that's probably the slowest drive I've ever made up north, because I was like, let's maintain the optimum speed for highest miles per gallon.
That's what we'll probably make these new electric cars. It'll probably force people to drive slower because they don't want to charge it up again.
Yeah, I mean, look, with full electric vehicles, I think it makes you very aware, because we're all really worried, like, about
don't
running out of juice.
Yeah.
But this kind of gives you the best of both worlds. And even if you're doing if you're doing under 20 miles an hour, you can pretty much be assured that you're going to use the electric vehicle, the hybrid battery, which is kind of the speed that you should be driving around London in. We're London based. When you're on the motorway, at times, if you are decelerating quickly, you will find that it won't be using fuel either. So, or if you're kind of slowing down, you'll find that it is pumping juice right back into the battery as well. So it's pretty cool, man. Had fun with it.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got an article up on the website all about it with some nice cool pictures of it too. Now it's time we jump into our interview with James Haskell.
One quick thing before you go.
Yeah, go on.
Congratulations on not having to clean your flat ever again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. Congratulations on not having to clean my flat ever again. Yeah, I just did some work with Joe.
For a year.
Yeah, joe.co.uk invited my flatmate to Thorpe Park to challenge ourselves on the Bouncezilla inflatable...
assault course.
Inflatable assault course, which was more like, I don't know if you've watched Gladiators or not. If you haven't, just type in Gladiators.
Or it Takeshi's felt like Castle.
It was like Takeshi's Castle combined with Gladiators. Like there's like a travelator bit at the end where you got to run up, and we had loads of fun filming that year. But once we did the main race and I won, spoiler alert, we had to go around and shoot some extra bits to like pickups. Mate, after I got around that a few times, I'll tell you what, I had a proper workout, you know. Proper workout. So yeah, that was Bouncezilla at Thorpe Park. Check that out. Do we put a link for that in the show description as well, so you can see me whooping
a
flat
in
his ass?
Yeah, we put a link to your Twitter at the end there.
Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely. That was a load of fun. Look out for more stuff that I might potentially be doing with Joe and Thorpe Park moving forward as well. But yes. Oh shit, one more thing. The Switch. Haven't even mentioned
the
that.
The Switch, yeah.
Oh yeah. This is where we'll ask you for a little bit of help, please. The podcast The Switch is a podcast, a pilot that I've made with Wise Buddha and Acast. It's a finalist in a competition where the winner will get a full series commissioned. Now, my version is about tech, obviously. And in an earlier episode of How to Kill an Hour, we met a guy called Joshua Browder who made a website called donotpay.co.uk. And he mentioned to us that this website that helped you pay off parking tickets, he was going to use the same tech in it to really help the world. And we kept an eye on him. And I wrote a documentary about him, and the pilot for that got picked up and rejigged and moved around, and it's now called The Switch.
Hi, my name's Marcus Bronzy. Welcome to The Switch. Now, technology is mostly made for you. That means behind all of the computer chips, circuits, processors, lines of code, etc., there are real human stories. This podcast will share them with you and also delve into how some of this tech works. In every episode, we're going to go on a journey where we're going to learn a little along the way.
I'd love if you could support it, but you can support it by one, clicking the link in the show description that says The Switch, checking out the pod, giving it a 5-star rating and review if you think it's worthy of it. It helps us, helps some of the weighting towards whether the judges pick it as the winner. Another thing you can do is go to launchpod.org and vote for The Switch as well. Really appreciate that too. I must say though, the other finalists are very good as well. So there's three great finalists there, and a lot of people say this and don't mean it. I genuinely, whoever wins, I'll be really, really happy. But I had a great time making a podcast with the guys there. So if you like something that's a bit docky, it's a bit, what would you say it's like, Bill?
It's very documentary like.
Yeah. Well, could you compare it to another pod? Of course you damn. No, I'm joking. Could you compare it to another pod?
I haven't known very many documentary type podcasts out there, to be honest.
I'm just going to go for a big one. You like Serial? You like this.
Oh, how could I forget Serial?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's so good it makes you forget Serial exists. Time to jump into an interview with an English rugby union player who played for Northampton Saints and internationally for England, made his international debut for England at just 21 in the 2007 Six Nations Championship against Wales, has enjoyed a great journey into broadcasting in their career most recently. They've been on A Question of Sport, A League of Their Own, The Chase, also done punditry for BT Sport, BBC, CAN, and some hilarious stuff for Sky Sports, which we'll get into in the interview as well. Also Channel 4. Worked on Channel 5 and TalkSport, has a number one podcast in their field at the moment, has written books, And is getting into music. I mean, there's nothing that this guy can't do. But one of the most important things is that on the 7th of May 2019, Mr. James Haskell announced his retirement from professional rugby via an Instagram post. So when he came in, the first thing we asked him was, is how is retirement?
Yeah, it's all right. It's good. It's treating me well. It's a bit more partying than I would have liked, just because I've lived kind of quite a dedicated life for the last 18 seasons, and I could probably do one night out, but there's been quite a few nights out. Everything seems to send into a party because I don't have anything to have to do. I've always got work stuff,
yeah.
So I'm a bit bad. Like I'll go for a party, you know, I'll let my hair down and go till one, then I'll just pack up and go, right, I've got to go home. But right. My wife's like, well, you just can't leave everyone. I said, well, I've got stuff to do. So we had a few arguments over that in terms of me wanting to pull the plug, because that's what I used to do when I played. You know, I'd go out, not drink, stay out for a bit and then leave because I have something the next day. Now I'm going out and getting smashed and then pulling the pin because I've got something the next day and I don't want to be late. I can't do hangovers very well. But other than that, it's good. A lot of chance to do different things, like come on your guys' podcast. Yeah. And I've had to get myself an assistant. I know it sounds really big time. I'm not like a Kardashian where I've got like a proper assistant. I've got one of these virtual assistants. They're incredible, actually. You kind of buy blocks of hours. Mm. So you buy like 5 hours, 10 hours, 20 hours or whatever. And she's sort of managing my diary. And it means that I'm like, because normally I just come into London to do this and not do anything else. But now I've got like five things back to back, all organized. So I'm getting stuff done. Yeah. It's driving my wife mad because she's a control freak and she wants to control everything.
Right.
So she can't do that anymore. So you know, and things like flights and stuff are getting sorted. I'm having a lot of fun. I haven't thought a lot about rugby.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
That's weird, right?
Well, do you know what it is? I think mentally it's quite a good thing, because every time I think about rugby, see rugby, watch clips of stuff on TV, talk about it, it gets me down a little bit, because the World Cup's coming up. I would like to play. It's not. It's just still has that kind of annoying effect. Also because my foot, which I retired from, is still really sore. So that pisses me off. So all those kind of things, you know, it's nice to just be away from it. And obviously, bizarrely, rugby's not really following me around at the moment. We're in the middle of summer. The England team are training. I've been asked to go into camp, so I might pop in and see them. But that'd be my first contact with rugby. I've had nothing else. I've just been DJing, a lot of speaking, a lot of partying, a lot of working, odd bit of training. I haven't been training as much as I should have done. That's been the hardest thing, trying to fit that in. You know, for kind of however many years, every day I knew where I was supposed to be. I mean, I went to boarding school from age kind of 8 till 18, so I knew where I was every day there. And then from 18 to 34, I was a professional sportsman. And now I have to create my own timetable, and some days I'm just messing it up and not getting time to train. Like today's the first time I've trained in 4 days today, so that's why I've got a bit of pump on. So
yeah, you're looking a bit wise. I don't look like you lost it quite yet, mate. But
I have slimmed down, actually. I was about 122 kilos about 8 weeks ago, and now I'm 112 something. So I've lost a little bit just for summer, you know.
So this is with a little bit of size lost on you. Yeah,
yeah, this is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Might not be looking at the video right now, but James is fucking wedge. He's wham. But yeah, so you did have some proper sort of time off in Fiji though, right? I heard you mentioning that on your own podcast as well, and you were looking very bronzed right now.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I've done all right actually with the tanning. Fiji was wicked. We went there for 2 days, flew out there, went for 2 days, had a really nice time getting introduced to Fiji, flew straight from Fiji to Tonga, where I had a mate of mine, Billy Vanapola, England rugby player, his wedding, which was insane. I ended up giving two speeches.
Two speeches?
First one was kind of like, pretty much helped myself up. Second one was I was invited up, and that was, you know, that was kind of amazing, culturally unbelievable, really kind of eye-opening. The Pacific Islands, you know, you kind of have no idea what they're like until you kind of go there, and obviously just Fiji, so beautiful, Tonga, so beautiful. And then we came back for a week and went to Turtle Island, which is where they filmed the movie Blue Lagoon. I haven't seen Blue Lagoon, but it's got Brooke Shields in it. Not sure a lot of your audience will have seen it. It's a bit of an old movie, but it's basically unbelievable lagoons, you know, crystal clear water. Went there for 5 days. Obviously did a hello photo shoot.
Standard.
got to do it. So that's out at the moment. So that's, you know, filling up shelves. So we did that, and then we came back, and then 3 days, 4 days later, we were in Geneva for another ex-teammate's mine wedding, because I've never been to weddings. I've never done stag do's, never done weddings, because I can never do it. Now I'm just going to everything, a drop of a hat.
So you're catching up on all the partying, basically. Yeah. You're getting all those hours back in again.
Yeah, so my wife said to me, she was like, when she was really hungover, this, it was her birthday, and I took her away to Soho Farmhouse, and we stayed, and I bumped into a friend and his wife. They were celebrating their anniversary, and it got real loose real quickly, but a big lunch turned into you know, I ended up getting on the decks at this Soho house. And the lady I was DJing with, a lady called Carly, she's a great DJ. She was playing some unbelievable tech house,
yeah,
right? Which is obviously not the kind of music you normally associate with Soho Farmhouse. And then she said, you get on the decks if you want. I was steaming. And we just ended up started playing techno. And about 40 people in this room just started going off.
Sick.
So I was obviously having the time of life. Next day when Chloe's kind of spewing and in head in hands, she's like, I've got to do, I gave up all this. I've done this. I did this 20 years ago. I'm like, you know, I'm trying to be professional, but now I'm going back through it because I never did it. I never went to uni, never did any of it. So I'm pretty much, you know, the body can't take a lot much more of it. So I'm trying to get the more training balance right as opposed to the partying balance.
Fair enough. But to be fair though, you must have been on a fair few rugby socials though, mate. And let's say they are definitely a category of party that, are way up there. They're not like casual drinks at a pub, are they, mate?
No, but the thing is, you normally only have them kind of once or twice a season. So, you know, I was always one of those players where I didn't really used to drink a lot, was always kind of quite anal about being professional and didn't ever want to stay out too long. So I used to cut, you know, used to pull the pin a lot, smoke bomb a lot, you know, I'm going to go into the toilet and just disappear, go home. But you would have end of season or mid-team social, which would be a full all-dayer, normally involving a fancy dress, which would be carnage. You know, one of our socials made it onto the Daily Mail, the Daily Express, a boat party. I can't go into too much detail, but it was it actually wasn't as bad as the newspapers made out. But it was on. We hired a stag do boat, which was purpose built, and the people on the staff, I think they thought they were going to be into like no win, no fee, win some cash. If they're going to try and blackmail the people, yeah, like morons. And they were like, we've never seen anything like it. And I was like, you run a stag do boat. Like it was 20 lads. I was dressed as a bird. Like it wasn't that crazy. But they tried to make out, we were sort of having some sort of homosexual orgy with each other on the boat. And I was like, listen, we haven't just all left our wives and girlfriends and like finally gone, we're free, put on YMCA. It was kind of quite a lot of bullshit. So that made that in the paper. So you now have to be so tame with what you're doing.
Was that when they used to like actually do honey traps? They used to send birds to parties. I've heard stories where they've sent
birds
to parties and they've gone there and like pretended to have a good time. A photo has been taken and then it's in the paper.
So there's two things. There's one very famous, a guy called Phil Greening, who's the US A7's coach, and a guy called Joe Worsley, who used to play with. They were walking outside Twickenham once after training. These two birds came over and were like, mate, can we just do a photo with you? We'd love to have a photo. And a guy came out with like a professional lens and just said the photo. They both lifted their tops up and had tits out with the sun plastered on them, and obviously did the lads. There's been quite a few stitch-ups. Now, I remember in Australia, I was involved in this. I don't want to give too much away from the autobiography.
Fair enough.
There was a boat trip where he went, and it basically was entitled Boats and Hoes, like, you know, from Step Brothers. And it was, again, a complete stitch up. There was no brass on the boat. There was nothing like that. But it was just because we were out in Australia, they just all try and cash in. But I mean, it'd be 10 times worse for footballers. Like, I wouldn't, if a bird came up to me randomly, if I was a footballer, I'd just run in the other direction. You know, that's why I'm so glad I'm married. So I just, anything that just, I just run the other way, and then I just can't be involved.
I can just see pictures of that trying to be taken and you just diving out of the way.
That's what happened on that Boats and Hoes thing. Everyone else was on the boat and this was going out, and I saw this guy pull out the most professional telescopic lens.
Big giveaway.
And I just went, lads, get down. And I fucking dived. And on this photo, you can just see my feet poking outside the boat where all the other lads are on there and no one heard me. And there's one of my mates like holding a Corona while his girls are kind of, they were like PR girls, like just serving drinks, but they were in like kind of lingerie-ish kind of things on this kind of boat trip, and it looked terrible, but I was well out of the way, but I still got mentioned in the text.
Standard, yeah, you still get put in.
I still got
foot was clearly in the wrong.
It was normally my terrible shoe choice that probably caught me out, you know what I mean, a big orthopedic shoe hanging off the back of the boat.
So like, how bad is the foot right now? Like, so you walked in here, you're not on crutches, but it's bad, so
I think at some point, you know, I hope it's calming down because I'm not running on it, but it's not amazing. I think that at some point I might have to have an operation to fuse it, which will, you know, 3 or 4 months rehab to get it right, where they basically take the joint out. They kind of almost attach your toe to the other bone. So you'll have limited range. There are apparently a couple of Premiership footballers running around with it. No rugby players had it done, or no top level rugby players had it done. It's annoying. It's just annoying because I love training. I love doing different stuff. It's just, you know, things like you just catch it, or just trying to walk sometimes, or if I wear bad shoes that aren't really stiff. Like if I wore flip-flops hour later, I'll be unable to walk. It's that sore. It's just a bit debilitating, really. That's just an annoying thing.
I can imagine like a coffee table stub is going to be a real big deal in your
life.
Or
a stairs stub. Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. I know. It is a bit of a nightmare. So I've just been smashing a load of... there's a lot of anti-inflammatories and bits and pieces that you can't take when you're playing because of testing and everything else. So I've just, I'm in the middle of a course of that to try to calm it down, but it's not making that much difference. So I think we just have to hold out and maybe get the operation.
Okay. But you're quite into your fitness. So if you're taking out that running cardio, how are you going to kind of counteract that now?
I've just got myself a Watt bike. They're pretty rank in terms of the condition. They've got this kind of cool app that links with them. I always use the VersaClimber. For me, like the VersaClimb is the best bit of cardio equipment. It's kind of full body carnage. It's the thing that Ivan Drago uses in Rocky IV.
That looks terrible.
It's honestly, it's nothing. Everyone always goes, oh, you should try the assault bike. You should try this. I'm like, nah, VersaClimb will end you. And that gets your legs. You come off that, you feel like you've done leg weights, your lungs are bursting. So what I'll do is I'm just doing beach weights at the moment, which is quite fun because I don't have to train for anything other than just aesthetics.
Mm.
So I'm doing this program called Pump City, which I'm really pleased about. Doing that, I've got Chloe onto it as well. And we basically just, I do, you know, whatever body part is, and then cardio afterwards. And I flip between HIIT, so obviously HIIT training, or moderate state stuff, a bit more endurance things. And then... you know, and then I'll come out with some horrific circuit like Chloe and I before her birthday, woke up on her birthday morning before we started piling into champagne and cake, just did a naughty circuit, pretty horrible, I almost threw up on myself. But I've just learned to rope climb as well, so we were doing some of that. Chloe learned to rope climb about 30 seconds. So we've just been playing around, just trying to have fun, but I still want to train. Like I still have to put myself in a hole. I put myself in a hole this morning just because I haven't trained for a while. I just like testing myself where I've still push myself.
It's very disciplined, to be honest, because a lot of sports people, not a lot of, but you do hear of sports people, I don't know, Prince Nazeem, and he's totally cool with it. He's just gone away. I just don't care.
Not about that life. I just think looking like a melted wheelie bin is not really my my vibe, do you know what I mean? Like when you tuck it, when you have to tuck your fucking stomach into top of your shorts, and you know what I mean? It's just not. Yeah. When you're wearing high-waisted shit to cover stuff up, it's just not. No good.
Saying that to my mate the other day, he's like, high-waisted jeans. I'm like, no. As soon as your jeans don't fit, that's a sign that something needs to be done.
I mean, there's a few, I know we're not, it's not the kind of show, but I've got some real issues with birds with high-waisted stuff. There's a big thing about high-waisted, just birds with, makes them, like, got terrible dumpers, massive darbs, or... the terminology I use is fupa, but you'd have to, I'm not going to tell you what that means, but you have to Google that for the listeners, what fupa, a lot of fupa hanging out the front, a lot of darbs, a lot of lads, right, big tracksuit bottoms, a lot of men wearing high-waisted stuff. It's like, no, forget high-waisted, it's not about the life. You've got to cover it up, then it's no good. You know, like I know women have got the advantage of Spanx, and the woman who made Spanx made a billion, I understand that. I'm not body shaming, but lads as well. There are some hanging lads. And English people in the summer, you see some of the most rascal get-ups you've ever seen. Terrible tattoos, pale, pasty, skin conditions, just shit gears everywhere. Mm. And it really upsets me when I drive around in the summer. And I'm not the best dressed person in the world either, but I it does depress me. English people at the seaside is just village.
I agree. I think when it comes to... wearing clothes, I always want to be the guy who wears my clothes. I don't want my clothes to wear me.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So yeah, like I've been big, I will be big again, and I get trim again, but I'm always in the mindset that if I've got a big belly and I'm out, I'm gonna wear the same kind of clothes. I'm not gonna try and wear some concealing six pack padded abs t-shirt or something like that.
Be like that weird guy, that Kendall, that Alvarez guy, the guy who's literally just tortured himself into oblivion. But it's weird, we as a society someone like him on the Daily Mail, we all watch him implode from a distance, and instead of someone just putting an arm around and going, mate, you have some serious mental health issues, we're not going to publish this because we don't want to keep thinking this is a good idea, where people are getting like fat put in to make abs. It's like no,
it's insane, the things you can do with fat nowadays is insane.
Mate,
isn't it?
but also it's hard. The thing is as well, we live in a world as well culturally where people trying to sell you the dream that it's really easy to get in shape, that actually being in shape's fun. It's hard. Like being really, really lean is hard. You have to be restrictive. But equally, it's actually not that hard to shift timber, and it's actually not that hard to stay in reasonable shape if you kind of understand. But we make things super complicated, nutrition and training, when there's so much technology and apps and stuff that can help you. Like MyFitnessPal's a key. You know, I track all my food, track everything, just because I know, you know, I can check. I mean, I literally went from 122 to 112 from just stopped from training, just restricting myself a little bit, still able to have fun, still able to drink when I need to drink. But people just make it really complicated. Like, you've got to drink, you know, anything that's green, or eat anything that are beige, or being vegan's better than, you know, no sugar, and no sugar's better than having no alcohol. And, you know, if you eat chocolate, you're going to die. It's just bullshit.
Well, people that have like 1,000 bananas in a smoothie and go, that's health.
Yeah.
That's health right now. Just have 1,000 carrots.
It's like my parents who I said to them, right, listen, you need to don't eat breakfast. You know, within 30 minutes of waking, good to have some whey protein or some protein. So have a protein shake, just because if you're not going to eat breakfast, good to start your day, metabolism, good for your immune system and everything else. And I came out, they're both getting fat as fuck, and I was like, what's going on? And like, I saw them make a smoothie, and it was like smoothie. They'd bought a mass gainer instead of whey protein because it was chocolate. They were banging in blueberries, bananas, fruit. You've got all these birds going, yeah, listen, I'm eating this wicked salad, and it's like salad covered in avocado, nuts, olive oil. I'm like, you've literally got 800 calories worth of stuff in that salad.
The dressing.
Yeah, but because people forget that fats are like 9 calories per 1 gram.
Yeah.
So people going, I'm eating nuts, healthy nuts. You're eating a fucking handful of 300 calories of nuts. Like, you're not doing yourself any favors. And they're all going, yeah, what I do is I have this salad, and then later I'm going to have pasta. You're like, no, that's just literally fat and carbohydrate. Where's the protein on there? But it's mad.
It's fair enough, though. MyFitnessPal, when I've used that quite a lot, and if you haven't used MyFitnessPal, basically it's an app where you can, it asks you all of the information, like age, weight, height, and then it kind of recommends on your preference, if you want to lose weight or gain a bit of weight, what to eat. And you can tweak it, go a bit further than that, but its presets are pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
But the easiest thing about it I like is I can go and eat something, scan it, like go Tesco, Sainsbury's, whatever, scan it, and it literally tells you the calories, the protein, and everything in it. And when I'm on it, when I'm doing more of that, it does work. And I think measuring is one of the most important things
so
when
key,
it comes to
because
fitness.
Also, well, there's two things. So I bought out a cookbook, Cooking for Fitness, which we put barcodes on every recipe so everyone can scan them. So you're making it and following the book. It's kind of quite unique in out there. People haven't done that yet. So that was kind of one of our key selling points with that. The other thing is that weighing stuff, it's really anal, a bit invasive, but actually gives you a really good idea because people guesstimate sometimes up to like 700, 800 calories wrong. That, like, I remember a guy, I gave this guy a plan, and I'd seen him like 2 days later, and he was like eating nothing for dinner. And I was like, what, why are you not eating? I told you, you've got to be eating for, you know, food, what's going on? He's like, oh, well, I've done all my calories. I went, how? And he said, well, I had 100 grams of oats at breakfast. I said, show me how much you had. And he filled a bowl up. I went, let me weigh that for you. It was like 30 grams. I was like, mate, you got to understand. Like, people guesstimate, oh, I'm having a steak, that's 700 grams. Like, no, that's 200 grams. Yeah. And I do that with the lads. We all sit around like England training or Northampton. I'll be like, right, guesstimate what those salmon, and it sounds like we run out of chat, but it's like, guesstimate that. And they're all off. They're all wrong. Do you know what I mean? And it's just so important. So just get a pair of scales, start doing it, start, you know, making a difference, because you could literally be out by that many calories and just completely screwing yourself over. So it's worth it. If you're serious about trying to change your body, doing MyFitnessPal, taking a bit of time to weigh yourself, even when you go out, looking at the menu before you get to the restaurant and just seeing what's what, typing it in, seeing where you go, you know.
And then you got to add on the 500 kilograms of butter that the chef throws on it anyway. Do you know what I mean?
And you don't know what they cook it in. That's the other thing. So that's why you got to go a bit safer, because you don't know what they're cooking it in.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some cooking programs and I've seen the chefs go, yeah, just put in a little bit of butter, half a knob of butter.
Well, the guy, that Salt Bay dude.
Yeah.
You know, if you see what he cooks those steak, he literally picks up a whole slab of butter, throws the butter into the pan, explodes oil, and then he melts and he's cooking this whole thing in it. I mean, it makes you feel sick. Like, he's never, all the food he cooks looks amazing. I just don't think I could bring myself to eat any of it.
Yeah.
It looks so, looks like a heart attack.
Some of the meat, when he cuts it and I look into it, and I, because I like a red steak, see a bleeding steak, I'm like, I'll have a slice of that, but not the whole cow though.
Yeah, but you know, he puts a cow, but then he puts like massive amounts of cheese on top of it and does all this stuff. Yeah. It's a bit aggressive. Yeah. Like, I love a steak. I mean, I'm massively into my barbecue. Like, I've got this new, I've gone completely mad this summer. I've got a pizza oven and a barbecue, this Traeger barbecue that cooks on wood chips.
Got Traeger, mate, yeah. Okay.
So key, mate. Honestly, I promise to God, I know they're expensive, but it has turned me from someone who couldn't cook into someone who literally is completed barbecuing. I tell you why, because you're cooking everything to temperature, nothing to time. And that is the key to anything. We, you know, we always look at things as packets and cook it or whatever. Nah, it is all about temperature. And I'm cooking up. I just did slow cook ribs, 5 hours, baby back ribs, barbecue sauce, you know, bit of brown sugar, all this kind of stuff. Mate, unbelievable. Pizza oven. I'm making fucking pizzas. It's like Domino's pizza restaurant around my house.
Yeah.
And it's just, honestly, it's just absolutely changed my whole barbecue. I'm trying to barbecue everything.
You're enjoying retirement, mate.
I waste all my money on technology. Yeah. That's my entire life. It's just technology.
What's some of the techie things you're into at the moment? I see you got an Apple Watch there, you're invested in that ecosystem.
Right, so I'm trying to start from sort of top to bottom.
Let's do it.
So the things that come with me everywhere I go, MacBook Pro everywhere, obviously portable hard drive. I always carry two sets of headphones, one Bluetooth, Beats Pros, you know, the cable ones, I think they're the best. Mm-hmm. I've just got those Power Beats.
The new ones.
The new ones, yeah. They're wicked. Obviously iPhone, Apple Watch, iPad. I've got an iPad Pro at home, but I use that for kind of watching stuff in the morning, doing emails when I'm sitting on the counter. But that comes, as I said, the thing comes with me everywhere. GoPro, always got GoPro with me, and a couple of little bit attachments that always kind of roll with me. Just because I find it super useful when I'm training, doing stuff, doing a bit of, you can go live from it. I've struggled a little bit with the live, but it's got that kind of real nice stabilization on it. If I'm going to go on holiday, I've got a Canon M50 for like vlogging with a Rode mic on top of it. I think, obviously a lot of DJing's kind of come part of my life. So I've got quite a cool setup at home. We were saying before the show, I've got, two 2000 Nexuses, a 900, two 1000s and a Zone 96 for more of the techno vibe, but I need to get the hang of that.
Yeah,
I use an Evermix box to record all those. That's so useful, just record everything to your phone, so even when I go into to gigs, I always take that with me. And then I'm trying to think what else. Obviously got drones. I fucking spent so much money on drones, but it's great, but I wish I had someone with me using the drone to film me, because otherwise all this stuff's great, but I'm always having to set it up and film myself.
And
I need someone to film me doing the stuff, but my wife is not interested in learning to do it. She doesn't care about any of these technologies. She just wants to use her iPhone and that's it. So I've got the Spark, I've got the Mavic Pro, I had the original Phantom, so I've got kind of them buzzing around. Obviously gym tech wise, I use, I said, the Apple Watch kind of every day for all the training kind of stuff. The apps on my Fitness Pal, kind of what I use all the time. I'm trying to think what else I do a lot of video editing myself as well.
You edit your own YouTube videos?
Edit my own YouTube videos. Make my own radio show. So I've got this house music show called Back Row Radio. So yeah. I had to buy myself a decent Rode mic and I don't know what the word is. Like a terminal for speakers, when you can... Like in your
little sound card.
Yeah, got that. Obviously, I had to buy a big portable spare screen because trying to make music off a normal MacBook screen is quite tricky. So that's kind of what comes with me everywhere. But my main staple is GoPro, laptop, phone, headphones, portable hard drive, camera, and I'm just on that all the time. Drives my missus mad, really.
It's great that you can throw it in a rucksack, though. She doesn't have to help you carry it.
No,
though,
she doesn't have to do anything. Yeah, that is key. But I think I'm always looking for the next kind of thing. Like I used to have I spent a lot of money on DJI products, like the Osmo Mobile. And then when I sort of started working with GoPro, I kind of went away with that. But there's a lot of things like the Osmo Mini
It's decent, mate.
Oh, I know. Everyone keeps saying to me, but then I'm like, fuck, I've got a couple of Hero 7s. I'm like, it's one of those things, until someone invents something that's kind of the next level. Like I've used that Fusion 360.
Yeah.
The camera's quite cool again. But a lot of stuff, I don't do a lot of extreme sports. So, there's only so much kind of training stuff you can do and holiday bits and pieces you can do. And I think GoPro, I think when they signed me, I think they thought I was maybe going to do...
Extreme.
And I was like, guys, I could not be less extreme if you tried. But I'm trying to think if there's anything else really technology-wise that I kind of really buy into. I'm always looking for the next gadget.
Are you kind of a fan of having things that are portable though, because a lot of the things you've mentioned, like you had the old Phantom DJI, but you've kind of gone for the ones that can fold up now. Is it kind of important for you to be able to take them all
100%? So I got my rucksack with me. I've left it outside the door where
it's right behind me.
It's always in there, so if I can take it with me, set it up really easily, it's fine. When I went on holiday, I kind of took my vlogging bag with me, which has got my Canon, GoPro, Fusion, obviously the tripods, all the kind of little attachments, the sticky bits and pieces. And obviously I always take my two USBs for DJ in case the main DJ dies and they need to call me up the crowd. Like,
always
like
ready.
Plane.
Yeah.
Is there a doctor on board? Is there a DJ on board? Actually, funny you should say that. Yes, there is. Get me on there.
Yeah.
Tiesto's died. I'll step up.
Tech house, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, all the uni gigs, commercial. I'll literally do whatever you need. Get me on there. So, yeah, so all the stuff is quite, I really like the portability of all cool. of it. You know, as I said, my life is through my laptop the entire time. And I kind of, you've got so many bits and pieces. And it's annoying that I love Apple, but they keep fucking around with all the attachments and bits and pieces. And that's why, I think, you know.
That's why I've stayed on this, yeah, on the last version of MacBook Pro, because it's still got the card reader. It's still got the old USBs.
Otherwise, you have to have an attachment for attachment before you know it. Like, I put Velcro on the back of my case so I could stick a hard drive onto the back, stick the adapters onto the back. So I had everything. So it looks like I've got a supercharged laptop.
But
I had to replace the battery in my MacBook. It was a nervous day. They're like, oh, we could do it in 5 days. I was like, I need it in 2 days. And they managed to hook me up. And now it works like a dream because I was ready to replace it. But now we're back, good friends. Actually, before I met my wife, I didn't love anyone as much as I loved my laptop. But now I've replaced that with her.
We're leaving that in the edit.
Nah, dips down. She dips down sometimes. Some days she's below it. She's pissing me off. But today she's on good form, so she's a bit.
Fair enough. Where did the DJing thing come from anyway?
So I've always used music as a tool before games. It was something I worked with my sports psychologist on since the age of 16. I was one of the first kind of players in the change room of my generation listening to music pre-game. No one else used to do it. You used to have a lot of speakers playing. When you got onto a bus for a game, I would be the only one with the headphones on. No one else would have them. And then it kind of slowly started filtering in. Now, if you don't have them on, you're the weird one. Everyone's got almost like a sea of headphones. You see every footballer getting off, has got his Beats on or whatever they're doing. So I always use music with that. And I started going to Vegas. I ended up going to Vegas 13 times in a span, a period. And it was obviously amazing. Vegas is literally the best place on earth. And I started going to Ibiza and I sort of fell in love with music and I started seeing DJs. And I was like, hold on a minute. Guys at the front of the room or girls at the front of the room controlling everyone's mood, playing unbelievable tunes, getting paid to do it with all the attention, why the fuck would I not want to do it? So luckily they turned out a load of rugby kind of fans were DJs. So Jaguar Skills, Simon Dunmore, who else? There's a couple more. I'm trying to think. There's a very famous Acid House DJ that I'm going to forget now. But so basically there was a lot of guys there and I started doing little lessons with everyone, just showed interest. And then I went and did a course at Subbase because I had to learn like that. I'm not one of these guys that's overly creative or can just pick stuff up. Like I need mythology behind what I'm doing and I need to be able to do step by step. So I did a course there. And now once or twice a week, I get a guy called Alex Grover, who's an unbelievable guy, comes along and to my gaff. I go meet him in London and we do DJ lessons just to keep topping stuff up. And I've been playing out for about 3 years and absolutely loving it. And then people started paying me and I was like, this has just literally turned my hobby into a job. That's not bad. So basically everything, all my hobbies, I've essentially turned into paid jobs, which I don't think is too bad. I mean, apart from barbecue, no one's paying me to barbecue.
Yet.
Yeah.
But barbecue cookbook on the way. Yeah. I'll take 5% off that, James. Thank you very much. Cheers.
No problem.
So actually, Jag was at Bournemouth Sevens and you were at Bournemouth Sevens. Yes. I was actually there as well randomly, but did you play the same day as Jag?
So I played, there's two, I played in the VI... The VVIP area.
The VVIP
area. And 4,000 people turned up.
Fuck.
And it was fucking insane. It was the most fun I've had a gig. There's a dude dressed as me. He was on his stag do, including red scrum cap, full England kit, and video camera from my schoolboy days. If you want to know about that, you have to Google that. And it was mega. And it went off. But I think Jag was playing either the closing party the next night or later that night.
Yeah.
Because also, the guy, Roger Woodall, who set Bournemouth Sevens up, is kind of the genius behind the whole event. I think he knew I DJed, but it's a lot of times I meet people and they don't know that I can actually DJ. There's a lot of people going, oh, you can actually DJ? I'm like, yeah. I think they think I'm like Paris Hilton, just pressing buttons or whatever. Mm. And don't really know what I'm doing. So he was quite astounded. So I think they kind of put me on a slot, a bit tentative, thinking if I completely fucked the whole thing up. But no, it went off, mate. It was absolutely insane. And we kind of raved for an hour. I wanted to stay on. But that was a classic case of where I'd basically worked at HSBC, for HSBC at the Sevens all day, got picked up in a car, met Chloe. Chloe and I went to Bournemouth, smashed the gig, got a little bit drunk, got back in the car, got driven back home, and then I worked at HSB Sevens the whole next day. So it's kind of, that's the crazy times. We never go too mad at these gigs, you know?
To be fair, you're like the perfect DJ for that kind of gig, because there's Sevens is literally, it's a rugby lot there, isn't it, really?
It was kind of quite cool, yeah. And but it was such a, it's like a full festival vibe. You've been, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
like
eight stages.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of going mad. It's the best sporting festival thing I've ever seen.
Easily, yeah.
I'm desperate to come back again.
Yeah, definitely.
And play it next year, because it was just so much fun.
Yeah, like we were there and like, I think I was at the Yard. I was on a stage called the Yard, and the vibe there was just insane. And then, you know, I wasn't as busy as you, so I got a little chance for a little walk around, like in between sets. And the vibe there was just insane.
Yeah,
and like everybody plays some sports during, is it sports during the day?
Yeah. So everyone plays sevens. There's sevens and netball all throughout the day. And then it finishes and everyone gets on it. And then I think there might be something on the Sunday. But I was just amazed. It's just trashed people everywhere. It was just a full festival.
Yeah.
Like everyone is absolutely ended everywhere. It was incredible. It was one of my best things. I mean, before that, I'd done something for the Young Farmers down in Blackpool, right? And I got invited to do that. And again, they said, do you want a DJ? I just say yes. And I didn't really pay much attention to what I was doing. You know, got there the day, got there about 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. I was on at 12. Started talking to people. I said, "Oh, so who's on before me?" And they went, "Our band." I was like, "Sweet." And I said, "Who's on after me?" They're like, "Nobody. You're headlining." I was like, "What?" And they're like, "You're headlining." And I was like, "Okay, well, fine, right. How many people are going to come down? There'll be 5,000 people down here." And I was like, "Yeah, but not in the thing." And they were like, "No, there'll be 5,000 in the thing." So I went out to look out the stage. Literally was just a sea of people, a metal barrier, and me up on stage. And obviously, as a rugby player, you play in front of 80,000 people. You don't notice individuals, and you're part of a team. It's a whole different world when you walk out onto the decks, and it's you, and it's them, and everybody's watching you. And everyone's night is dictated by whether you play the right tunes. You can literally fuck up everyone's vibe, and that was mega. And I thought that was kind of the pinnacle. But then Bournemouth kind of took it to a whole new level. And I think Ibiza Rocks is going to be another level again. So okay. I'm pretty excited by that.
And is this going to be Tech House that you're playing?
No. So my radio show is my much more my kind of vibe. It's kind of defected record style music into a bit more Tech House. Into the last 20 minutes is always kind of techno. The stuff that I play for universities, the stuff I play at this stuff, much more commercial, much more kind of, you know, MK, that kind of stuff that you would hear, Medusa, all those kind of people that are playing at the moment. So I would never do that. I think actually, interestingly enough, Ibiza Rocks, they had no idea who I was. I think it was actually Craig David who kind of put me forward for it, because I've got to know him quite well, and he's an absolute legend. I think they thought I was going to try and play tech house and techno to a pool party crowd in Ibiza. And I was like, no, don't panic. That's not my, I've got two separate worlds, really. I've got my personal preference, which, you know, as I said, when we went to Soho Farmhouse, just kicked off. It was unbelievable. My first track that I mixed in, I was like, pointed. I was like, can I play this? She was like, yeah. It was like Adam Beyer's Losing Your Mind. And everybody just went mental. I don't even get to play this at the gigs I want to play this at. But all the commercial stuff I absolutely love. You know, I was jamming yesterday with my DJ guy, and we were just playing all the kind of music that we were playing and that we'd play at Ibiza. And it's wicked. It's just really commercial, great vibes, great pool party vibe. So I love both. I love both. Anything that the crowd react to. But I'm not, sadly, I haven't, you know, I'm not Carl Cox in a kind of a niche where you book me and you know what you're going to get. I play whatever the crowd want, except I don't play a lot of hip hop or garage, really. So it's kind of different genres of house. I'm going to try to learn to DJ hip hop, actually. It's something I want to try.
Really? Would you like to step into that as well?
Yeah, well, what I'd like to do is just be able to go to, I'd like to get so upskilled. It's the same thing with I apply to sport with DJing, is that I want to get upskilled and everything. So I did the music production course with Tool Room. So I wanted to get into that. So I started trying to do producing some music. And obviously, I finished off with a track out of that. I've actually gone into studio with a couple of times, a guy called Dean Ramirez and a lady called DJ Laura, and we've made some tracks and stuff. But I want to improve. So I'd love to get a bit of garage, a bit of R&B, a bit of hip-hop, so I can upskill myself anyway. So if I come into that, I can play different formats, I can play different crowds. For me, it's like a never-ending journey, and it's something I really love. So I kind of invest in it. You know, I pay to publish my radio show. I pay to have these DJ lessons because I think it's really good for me. And I think my same sort of application to anything in life is that you can always get better. I just want to do it. You know, I've never tried it. I don't know how hard it's going to be. You know, I probably won't try and DJ trap or drum and bass because I don't see myself doing that. But I think in a bit of garage, be able to bang a few of those in, be able to bang in a bit of, you know, R&B, a bit of hip hop.
Jag's a good shout for that, actually.
Mate, he's unbelievable. He sent me he sent me 15 of his latest kind of remix tracks and, mate, they're unbelievable. And I cannot wait to play them. But the problem is, I think the time I want at Ibiza is too early for them.
Yeah.
But, mate, they're incredible. And they're all time stretched. So it's literally, you just quick mix and they're just bangers. Yeah. Every single one. He's a genius. Like, I remember I went round to his house to give him a DJ lesson. He just taught me beat juggling on vinyl.
Yeah.
He had a Serato. He had two 1210s, what they are. And he was literally teaching me beat juggling. And I remember I was doing, he was like, no, go back. No. All I kept saying, was no. It's like, right about, by the end of it, we were kind of getting it. But it's just cool. It's just amazing things like this.
Well, look, with teachers like that, mate, you're going to be smashing clubs. No. I'll tell you what.
No, because the thing is as well, is that remember that guys like Jagger Skills and Simon Dunmore and all these people are like geniuses. They've been doing it from such an early age. It's often sometimes very hard to kind of communicate how you do it. That's why I had to go to a class and actually learn from the beginning and understand music. I still, you know, don't, obviously, you know, I'm still trying to comprehend all of it. I don't think I fully get it, but I kind of understand it. But just now the principles of mixing and trying to do things and, you know, I started doing a bit of a cappella mixing, trying to put things over the top as well of stuff. So, you know, I got onto the three deck mixing. I quite enjoy that kind of stuff. So I DJed at Ascot race course about 3 weeks ago, and I had to three gigs, 1 45-minute, 1 hour, 1 15-minute. And I honestly lost my mind.
1 5, 15.
1 5. Weird. Weird, right? But yeah. The weird thing was, like, it was, I walked into this place to play, and if you stepped into the tent, you could hear the music, and the player was open-sided, you could hear the music. If you took your foot outside the tent, you couldn't hear it. So I walked up to decks, and I was like swapping over this woman, and I literally, my tour manager was me, and I said, this isn't volume, is it? They're like, oh, because the racing's on. I went, well, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
You might as well put Spotify on. And they were like, no, it's as loud as we can go. I was like, well, you've got to go a little bit louder. I mean, I can't. If I stepped away from the monitor, I couldn't hear it. So then I had I ended up wanting to kill this sound guy who was a complete plum, who kept telling me he used to be a drummer. I was like, mate, I don't give a shit what you used to do. Shut up and fucking turn up the volume. So honestly, he was like pretending to walk around on an iPad the whole time.
Yeah.
I knew he wasn't doing anything. Yeah. So every time he walked away, I'd just turn up the booth monitors. He'd come and turn them down. While he'd walk away, I'd turn them back up again. I'd turn the main up. He'd be fucking turning it down. And then by the end of it, there was no bass. No, there was no bass in the entire place. So every time in my headphones, when it dropped, I was having the time of my life, right? And I'd be like, yes, I take them off, and it'd just be like, tss, 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 tss. And I, honestly, by the end of it, I got shit-faced because I was, this is bullshit. And I had hands up to my eyes, like binoculars, like, where's the bass? Can anybody see the bass? And people in the crowd go, where's the bass? And I was like, I don't know. Ask that prick. Where's the bass? Mate, honestly, it was fucking bullshit. But I actually recorded it. And because no one could hear it, the last half an hour of my hour set, I just played three deck mixing, a Honey Dijon set from Sugar Mountain, which is unbelievable. If you look on, listen to on SoundCloud, it's one of the best house sets I've ever heard. And I was just playing all that, and I recorded it, so it sounds good. So I'm going to put it up on my thing.
Sapper, where do you put your mixes up? Are you going to put it on the podcast?
I've got it on Mixcloud and Soundcloud, under James Haskell. Soundcloud just randomly takes shit down every 5 minutes, so that's very frustrating. But Mixcloud, they've kept all the mixes up there, so I've kind of got everything I've done. It's under James Hask or James Haskell if you search that. So I've got a couple of thousand followers on each one. But one of I made a deep house mix once, and it had over 100,000 listens, so I thought it was like unbelievable. And it went to number one and everything. I was like, it's a big, I thought it was going to be the big, big break, but it didn't happen. It just meant I went to number one and that was it and got loads of people listening.
It's a good look though, man. Like, honestly, I'm really surprised because a lot of people like to kind of, one, omit the fact that they've gone to DJ school. A lot of people are like, yeah, I just started DJing because I'm sick. I am the party.
I'm not sick.
And two, like, you are actually, bruv, you're doing a lot. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're not just doing like bar mitzvahs, nah, you know.
But I am weddings. Available for weddings and funerals. But I tell you, I was doing something for Grenade. I'm sponsored by Grenade, the Settlement Range. And I went to a place called Tanks a Lot the other day. If you see on my Instagram, I'm driving like a big orange tank and shit. But there was a hearse tank, which was a big black tank where they'd taken the back out of it and put a Cadillac hearse into the back of it with glass sides. And people have been using it for funerals.
Sick.
So I'm thinking, I did Pride this year and they had a pink tank. So next year, I want to turn up to Pride with a pink tank, decks on top of it, speakers on the front of the tank, roll that down Regent Street with a massive rave up with
Fuck
me
yes.
full rainbow gears just playing Unbelievable tunes. House tunes as we're going along.
Sick, mate. If you want a host for that, I'm down, man. Yeah, Rainbow yeah. suit is ready.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, mate, I need a hype man. I literally need a hype man.
I am that guy, bro. Really, that's what
please.
I do.
Get it on. Because honestly, it was the most ridiculous party I've ever been involved in. Like, I know, and people go, pride, it's a protest, it's not a thing. And I was like, well, it's the best of both worlds. Why can't we have a fucking great time and protest?
Going to be honest, less of a protest, more of a party. Well, I'm going to be honest.
What's interesting was is that after all this kind of shit with Israel Folau and a few other people, yeah. and all these kind of mad religious people, it was interesting that it was like, you know, 6 or 7 people deep. It was like six, I swear there must have been about 60,000 people out in London. And it just kind of really made you realise that we're a lot more progressive and accepting and the world is a good place. Put me in a tank listening to that with, I'm every woman. something like that, you know, like YMCA yes. or whatever. You know, I just, mate, it was going off. Yeah. So
sick.
I'm all over that.
I mean, that must have been quite an eye-opening moment, your responses to his comments though, earlier on in the year, because I kind of saw, it got to you, man. I could tell in the reaction to your reaction.
Yeah.
I could tell that it got under your skin a little bit. Yeah. It did, though, didn't it?
No. I think, you know, I obviously, anyone with a brain or anyone who's level-headed,
of course.
Understands what he was saying was bullshit and understands that, you know, without getting too deep, religion is fantastic because it gives so many people hope, you know, a voice for when you, or someone to listen to when you're struggling, rules to live your life by, can make the world a better place. It's also responsible for complete and utter carnage across the whole thing. More people have died in the name of religion than anything else. But if you're level-headed, you can see the positivity in both. What he said was just nonsense. And the reaction to it, you know, it was so funny. This Christian activist group tried to get me... They sent hundreds of letters into the RFU, apparently, trying to get me, like, sanctioned because I'd said some hate speech. I was like, what are you going to do? I'm retiring. I wouldn't even turn up to the tribunal. Like, you know, we're going to sanction you. No, you're not. Yeah. It's like being at school. When you leave school, it's like, well, we're going to put you in detention. You're not. We're going to send you a letter, and I ain't going to read it. So it's just, you have to be very careful because religious people are nutters, and they will, you know, you can't push them too hard because they will just turn up to your house and kill you. That's what people do. You know what I mean, in all sorts of places. So I've kind of tried to tone it down. I was just pissed off because we do a lot of stuff for lots of people in rugby, lots of charities. And I think when someone then, you know, people were going to be, well, where were you when, you know, Muslims were killing these people? Where were you when this was happening? I was like, well, hold on a minute. I don't complain about everything in the world. Someone in my sphere of influence said something that I didn't like about something we are standing up for. We've just been wearing rainbow laces. So I'm not picking a fight with everyone. I'm not one of these people who, you know, and they say it's called virtue signaling, which I learned was a new word. That's what all the bell ends on social media call it. And I was like, no, I just heard something I didn't like and I spoke up about it because he put something out there. So I thought I'd put something out there. And I thought it was important to do that. I think there's a lot of people, you know, that are through social media feel guilty about them, their appearance, about their how they should live their lives, how they should act. If someone like that puts something out there, it's bad. Like, I'm not wiser than white. I make mistakes all the time. I've been rude to people. I've said shit to people. But I just think, in particular, that just annoyed me. And then the reaction to it was just quite funny. It was like, it was just bizarre. I mean, I've been condemned to hell loads of times, but we'll see. You know, I'll either be operating at, you know, drinking a martini at the bar in heaven,
or playing a kick-ass set in hell.
Or there won't be anything, and I'll be worm food. Who knows? Or come back as a caterpillar. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah.
Fair enough.
We'll worry about that when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose as part of your transition into broadcasting, though, is being aware of just the public's reaction to what you say. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes it could be negative, or other times it can be quite positive and viral, even.
I think the thing with it is you've got to understand that now in life you can offend anyone for anything. Everybody's super sensitive. Everybody has a word. Everyone has a platform. But common sense should be the guiding force. And you know, you've got big corporations, big media people, you know, they do crap their pants first and foremost because they've got to protect themselves. But actually, that's why politics is going down the toilet, because nobody wants to offend anyone. No one wants to make tough decisions. And I don't want to alienate people, but I've got an opinion about certain things. And more often than not, I feel it's based on some common sense. However, I'm very acutely aware that I come from a certain section of society. I come from a certain upbringing, a certain thing. So, you know, I would never try to put myself in the position of someone that is different from me. And I think it's very bad when people do that. But again, hopefully common sense will be your guiding factor. But listen, you know, I am a bit controversial sometimes, but I don't mean to be. It's just, you've got an opinion. I think it's important. Now, nobody has an opinion. Or if they do, they're suddenly Katie Hopkins, where it's like, completely mad.
And I think it takes a lot more people saying level-headed things like yourself to kind of counteract those other people, because you find that bad news spreads, whether it's somebody saying they don't like what someone says or they do like what someone says, that just seems to go viral a lot more quickly. Do you know what I mean? So I think we need more stand-up people like yourself to say what they feel, as long as it's morally right. I mean, I believe to do that, because it's going to take more people like yourself saying stuff like that than it is that people that are going totally the other way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but also I think as well, you know, this, I just finished that book, The Secret Barrister, and it's really interesting about, you know, the law and how, you know, when people get sanctioned for low sentences, how everyone always breathes, oh, the judge should be fired, this isn't right, we're letting paedophiles out. But interestingly, there's loads of different things that we don't know as members of the public, that the reason the judges can't give too many sanctions, why this has happened, but you don't know about it. And that's just that in the law side of what we read in the media. So there's so much stuff that we don't believe in, so much reactionary stuff that goes on, that sometimes it's just having a moment and actually being, look, you know, if for example, with Christianity, you know, if they wrote a new Testament, because the Old Testament was too aggressive, so he changed it.
Old Testament
God was like killing and condemning and like genocide, but because he said it's not genocide, that's the argument. But they had the New Testament bit. But it's like, well, fine, you changed it. Well, why can't we just be progressive? Why can't you say, well, actually, that was then, now let's progress a little bit further and let's go, actually, do you know what? Since there was Adam and Eve, there's been Adam and Steve, there's been, you know, Jess and Clara, there's been fucking everybody doing whatever they wanted to do. Let's just be progressive. But it just seems like we're stuck in that kind of weird mindset where we'll bend the rules a little bit. It's like gun laws in America. It's like, you cannot change the Second Amendment. It's like, yes, you can. It's an amendment, you dickheads. That's exactly why you can change it. It was an amendment. And it was about, you know, I think it's, who is it who says it? It's Jim Jeffries is talking about the fact that, you know, people could have the right to bear arms, a flintlock musket. So a flintlock musket gives you a lot of time to simmer down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, loading it, powder, you know, you're there for 20 minutes before you shot someone.
Yeah.
That wasn't based on a bloke with an AR-15 with a banana mag and a laser sight. That wasn't, you know, that was to stop the government trying to take it. But again, common sense just says, no, you know, more guns. Everybody needs guns. Arm the teachers. Arm the kids.
Yeah.
I love it when Sacha Baron Cohen got those American people to say about doing like cartoons for arming the kids. Like, preschoolers. Arm the preschoolers.
Yeah. Oh, that was, what was that? Was that This Is America? What was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Like, Tommy, when they said, when they go to the people, goes, who wants $25 million of investment? Yeah. Who wants to have a new building? Yeah. Who, you guys have won. Are you ready? A new super mask. And everyone's like, yeah, what? And they all go mad. And it's like, oh God, no, this is literally what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
So I just love it when you get a little glimpse into, you know, through the looking glass and see actually what people are really like.
Yeah.
But, you know, guns, homosexuality, mosques everywhere. The world is just a crazy place.
2019,
mate. I just don't understand, you know, why everyone gets bogged down by all these things.
Yeah, I mean, some of it, I think, is just consuming a lot of media. Like, I feel like I have to take a little break from the news sometimes. I have to distance myself. If I sat there, like, my dad's terrible for this. He'll sit there, retired. He'll watch the news all day long.
Oh,
and I'll come in and see him in an afternoon on a weekend, and he'll be sitting there going, oh. And I'm like, Dad, why are you doing this to yourself, Dad? Get on the allotment and go and do your tomatoes.
Yeah, you don't need to be doing that. Like, because that is the thing, is we've got so much consumable media now, and nobody looks into any fact-checking. That's why I'm always like, I love a dinner party story where you're sitting down there talking or having dinner with your mates or whatever, and you're like, so, you know, did you hear that this has happened? And I'm pretty much sure now that most of the facts are wrong.
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
And it's like they didn't make it up, and it's always a friend of a friend who told you something, and no one ever looks into any of it. So that is my big, that's why I think like platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they should, you know, have algorithms and stuff to just filter this stuff out and just get rid of it. Because I died on Facebook from a steroid overdose.
Right.
I died, and I was selling drugs, and then I killed myself. And all of the whole idea, and they put it on a banner with ESPN. It went everywhere. But the actual was eventually they were trying to sell the steroids that I'd apparently died of. It was nothing to do with it, and that was just fake news. And I died.
Fake news. Really bad advertisement for the steroids, though. Isn't it? Really, like, yeah,
got
look good,
hench.
Die.
Got two hench, and then I died.
Yeah, perfect steroids if you want to get hench.
But
and
it happened to Tom Brady as well, so the NFL guy. So that was quite pleased that he'd been accused of failing a drugs test. I'd accused of failing a drugs test. Then I'd either top myself or I'd die because of the steroids. But ultimately, it was because of the steroids, and you could purchase them at this website.
So basically, somebody did some testing on Facebook. They did all three articles and thought, right, which one's got the most clout? Like, this one, we'll stick with that. Put the pay behind that. Yeah. Let's get some steroids.
Yeah. And it was all on the back of it, ESPN stuff. And I was like, well, that's no good, is it?
Bastards.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So it's very apparent to a listener now that you're an active guy. You do loads. I mean, we've still not even spoken about the books yet and you know, the house of rugby. But when you were like always tinkering away and trying new things during your career and even now, was there anyone ribbing you like in your team? Like, James, you're doing way too much, man.
Yeah, I mean, my wife does that to me now. But yeah, I took criticism from everybody. I took criticism from all the old school rugby players. I took criticism from journalists. I took criticism from coaches for just trying to broaden my horizons. And now, you know, I've just retired. It's a scary place. There's lots of psychological issues with retiring for lots of different people. And because I haven't got a vocation, I still have to work and find stuff. But I'm glad that I've started already the path and done these things already, because a lot of lads haven't. And a lot of lads, you know, will have a better careers than me or worse careers than me. And it's a very scary place. So yeah, I got heat from everybody. I've always been guilty of probably doing too much, even though I feel like in the last kind of 5 or 6 years, I got the work-life balance right. It's better to do two things really well than 10 things badly. But I just end up being reactionary, you know, like the music thing. Everyone's like, we should just focus on DJing. I'm like, yes, but that unfortunately is not going to pay the bills and is great, but I'm going to struggle massively to become credible. Everyone keeps saying to me, credit, you know, you're a rugby player, you know, you're not going to be taken seriously. People in music or as in art, as in everything, are very like particular. So it's going to be a long battle. You know, the fitness books and cookbooks were great because I was helping people and they were fantastic. But, you know, again, it's not a sustainable thing. You have to have the sales to match it. I mean, you know, both of them sold really well. But in comparison to what my wife sold, you know, she absolutely killed it. She was the second biggest selling fitness author of 2018 behind the body coach bastard. Yeah. He's just completed the game.
Ain't no one stopping him.
No one's stopping me.
He is in the next stratosphere. He's up there.
He's different level. He's just going to bed like Scrooge McDuck on a on a massive mound of cash.
Doing crunches with just cash.
With gold blocks. That was what I would do. Instead of kettlebells, gold bars. Yeah. So he's been kind of killing it. And then, you know, the TV and broadcasting stuff, again, I absolutely love it, but it's freelance. It's very... You know, I feel like you have to make stuff happen for yourself, hence me setting up the radio show, hence me kind of doing all the social media bits and pieces. And
the sing song?
Sorry, mate. Carry on, mate. Sorry. Just came across a clip.
You fucking stitched
just
me
came
up
across a clip.
Having a sing song. Oh, it was the best clip ever.
Just you were speaking about broadcasters, so just came across this clip of you. I mean as a broadcaster, I think everybody has their highlight reels. This is definitely one of yours. Yeah. I'd like you to explain what happened afterwards, but listen carefully to the clarity James brings to this conversation on Sky Sports Rugby.
Sing song? Is it everyone into the ice bath? What will they be doing now?
I think you'll have a sing song. It's important to celebrate a victory, whether it was the prettiest thing in the world. I think you've got to get around with each other, ready to regroup next week.
Hey, you know what, right? Everybody laughs at that. I genuinely thought at the time I was having a stroke. Honestly, because what happened was is that somebody in the truck had put a delay on my headphones, right? And there's an app that you can get on your iPhone, and Chris Moyles does it on his radio show, where if you put your voice on a certain time lag delay and your headphones and you can hear it, your brain can't function and you're unable to speak.
Yeah.
And the guy had done that to me, so I could hear myself in my headphones. And when I started to talk, it felt like I was slipping to one side or standing up. I was like, oh my God, this can't be what I sound like. Because in my mind, I was thinking clearly, I was like, right, have a sing song. Even if it's not the prettiest game together, you want to regroup, make sure you celebrate the little victories, you know, and go again. But it came out absolute bollocks, right? but as I was talking, I could hear it and I thought, oh, I've heard talkback before, you know, maybe it's fine. And then I looked at Will Greenwood, he was fine. I went off and mowed the lawn. And then everyone went, like, laughed at me. And I was like, what for? And they went, did you not hear yourself? I went, oh, that's not how I sounded. And they were like, yes, it was. And then my phone just went, blew up. And everyone's like, and obviously you got all the football fans going, mate, you're such a fucking mug drinking. Don't drink, you fucking idiot. Like, everyone's going completely mad. Like, shouldn't be pissed. You know, too much hospitality. I was like, I haven't had one drink.
Was that fully sober then, really?
Mate, 100%. I was like I am now, 100% sober.
Yeah.
I promise you.
I thought you were going to level with me and be like, yeah.
No, I tell you, I wouldn't give a shit. I'm retired. I'd honestly be like, no, but mate, I'd have to have been on a load of narcotics and a load of drinks to be able to do that. That's like, that's the kind of shit you see that Kerry Katona going on, like, Good Morning Britain or like Britney Spears smashing a load of, like, Vicodin and sleepers and, you know, after a 24-hour flight.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't even, when I'm drunk normally, I don't change.
I mean, what was great about that, though, is that it's your straight face, is that you look like, was it the Fast Show? There was the guy that was like, and I was very, very, very drunk.
Yeah, me, the third Duke of Wimborne, in the girls' changing room, my age, my reputation, I was very, very, very drunk. That's exactly where it is like that. Sing-song, the whole thing was made of marzipan. That's exactly what it was like, yeah. That's essentially what I felt like. But I was legit 100% sober.
Yeah, so I guess somebody got in a little bit of trouble then for that delay then, right?
No one took the accountability. I just weathered it. I had so much so I had to go on Soccer AM to deal with it because all the football fans were like getting into me still, you know. But they call things like football fans, they just call you the C-U-N-T every 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So, you're like, you fucking, you're like, oh, God, calm down. So I had to deal with that. But it's just basically public shaming, and everyone now brings it up. So thanks, lads, for doing
that. No problem.
It's fine. But it'd
be rude not to.
It's perpetuating that kind of fool, you know, just that bit of myth. Is he going to get loose? Is he not going to get loose? Yeah. Is he crazy? Can he speak? Can he not speak? But hopefully it hasn't affected my bookings.
I think it will make your bookings go up. I think there are people tuning in just to see. Right, has he got this?
I've actually subsequently done Sky a few times since. Thank God I got back on the horse. Because I think if work had dried up after that and that was my last moment in the sun.
Yeah.
Could have been real bad.
Yeah, it would have been, man. But yeah, sorry. Look, we'll put a link to the clip in the show description. It's a tweet that went out as a geezer who just had his, like, Sky on.
It was my mate.
Was it your mate?
It was my guy called Dan Robson who plays for me, and he was he prime ready to stitch me.
Who needs enemies, right?
I know.
Who needs enemies when you've got mates like that? So the rugby podcast, House of Rugby, we're doing this, right? It's like number one rugby podcast in the UK. Yeah. I'm hearing it now.
Yeah, yeah.
What's it about though? Because if you're not a rugby fan, I feel like this is a great rugby podcast to get into as well.
Yeah. So look, I think the whole idea that the House of Rugby was initially, I think they wanted to create something that wasn't too laddie, which was informative, which would have different guests all the time talking about rugby, but was more about stories, personalities, views, and perspectives. And actually, the biggest thing we're getting is that people who have no interest in rugby are tuning in, because I think sports stories, behind the scenes stuff is applicable to anybody. And I think sometimes people want an insight of what it's like in the change room, what it's like dealing with my retirement, what it's like dealing with the ups and downs of being a sports person. We've had my wife on, giving it a perspective of what it's like going out with a sports person. We've had Mike Tindall's wife on, obviously Zara. We've had all these kind of different people on. And players have kind of come on and opened up and said, Billy Vanopoulos said, when he was struggling with his injury, he turned to drink a little bit. He was getting a bit loose. And I think we've kind of created a comfortable atmosphere where people can speak freely. And it's just gone mega, really. I think, there's other podcasts out there that are super noisy, which are for real keenos, who they want to dissect everything, they want to talk about everything. It's not really my vibe. I like rugby. I'm not a huge rugby fan. I don't sit and watch rugby all the time. I used to watch rugby more to learn about stuff from other players that I was interested in learning from. I wouldn't watch games. Where some players, Elliot Daly, Dan Robson, they will watch every bit of rugby on the TV. They will plan their weekend round. If we go on an away game and we're playing the next day, they will get the hotel bar to put on that night's game so they can watch it all. That's not me. And I think House of Rugby has been kind of really good with that. You know, we were sponsored by Guinness. You know, we get to have a beer. We get to sit back and relax. You know, Alex Payne is fantastic. He's kind of an ex-Sky presenter, or still does some Sky presenting, but very polished, very reserved, kind of little Lord Fauntleroy. He's kind of like, you know, like a Just William-esque character. And there's kind of me, obviously just king of verbal diarrhea. And you've kind of got Mike Tindall, World Cup winner, you know, very experienced. Then kind of Mike will go off and will bring in a Ben Ryan, you know, who's coached Fiji to the gold medal at the Olympics. But just culturally, the stories about what it was like to be in Fiji and what Fiji was like and the stuff he had to do, like his first training session, he turned up and their best player wasn't there. So after the training session, he went to the village and the guy was on the floor and he couldn't play because someone had cursed his legs. And like, everyone was legit, like, you can't play. And I've tried to use that excuse a few times as to why I walk funny or why I couldn't train. Yeah. My legs are cursed. Obviously, no one believed it. But it's kind of quite mega.
Yeah, it is, man. You had some great guests on there as well, including like Richard from Richard and Judy.
Yeah.
Randomly, yeah.
Well, because you know he's Chloe's dad.
No,
my wife's dad.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so my wife's dad. Yeah, I know.
What a father-in-law.
I know. Like, what a boy, mate. He's unbelievable. He's wicked. So that's Chloe. So I didn't know until the first after first two or three dates that it was her dad. It was only when I'd stayed over and I looked at the picture on the wall. And I thought, fucking hell, Chloe's into some fruit looking Jesus. Like I know, it's kind of like an older, you know, well aged, not but like when I say well aged, like aged unbelievably well, playboy character. So I don't even like that. You know, we were chalk and cheese. And then I found out it was a dad. So it was a little bit of a sigh of relief. But yeah, Rich and Judy are my in laws. So it's their wicked people. So he came on. We've had all sorts, really.
Yeah. Vernon Kay, I think.
Yeah, Vernon Kay presented one of them. Yeah. But the back catalogue of people coming on is fantastic. We've got a new 44 shows coming up, so we're going to do some more bits and pieces. Obviously, the World Cup's coming up. I'm trying to get a few other people on board. You know, I want to get some other people from different sports. I might see if I can get David Hay in from the boxing world.
I think that'd be an interesting chat. He's a good talker, isn't he?
He's a very good talker.
Yeah, so he's got a chat.
I'm keen to get a few people in.
What's Christmas like, though, at Richard and Judy's house, though, if you go over to the in-laws?
Well, that was my very first meeting with them. I got invited over to Boxing Day.
That's
right,
a big deal.
That is a massive deal. Yeah. And I, not most people would normally kind of sort of crap their pants and just not go. But I fronted it. I was like, yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. What's the worst going to happen? Rolled in, entire family, her three brothers, all their girlfriends, me, Rich and Judy in there. It was brilliant. It was all going really swimmingly until they told me that Richard was a bit of a animal in the kitchen. That like when he's cooking and balancing him, you don't want to disturb him. Like, he once told Jamie Oliver to fuck off. Out of the kitchen when Jamie Oliver came in. So I bowled in, thought I'd break a bit of ice, give him a bit of stick, and he just went, fuck off. And I literally went, whoop, turned around, came back to the table and was like, head in hands like this, going, Chloe was like, what's wrong, babe? And I was like, I don't know how to say this, Chloe, but your dad just told me to fuck off. And I just don't think I can, I mean, it's really awkward. I don't think we can, you know, I probably have to go home now because, you know, when some parent told you to fuck off, you think it's really bad.
Yeah.
But Richard just breezed in, like he said nothing. We were best of friends as everywhere and apparently tells everyone to fuck off. So it was kind of quite the perfect thing. But we bonded ever since. Judy hasn't told me to fuck off, which is good.
Fair, I mean, she tells you to fuck off. It's real.
I think it's really good. Yeah, especially she's like a, you know, kind of a best-selling author, academic. I think if she pulls the pin out on that one, it's bad.
Yeah, it's bad news. But was the food good, though?
Very good, actually. Very good. Yeah, it was really good. He makes a naughty little gravy, actually, kind of a homemade. Yeah. I think there's a bit of sherry in there. I think there's a few bits and pieces and a bit of port. I think it's very nice.
Yeah, that's a good gravy. Yeah. A bit of booze in it,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, there is.
So before you get out of here, because you've been here for an hour, clearly, what are you thinking about rugby this year then, World Cup? I know, like you said at the start, it's a bit of a sore, because you're kind of so close to the end of your career, so you're next to it, really, aren't you? You're looking at it, you've just passed it, so what just passed it, just fucking up, you passed it.
You've dusted it.
Yeah, what are your thoughts for the team this year?
I think it's really exciting. I think, as I said, I'm going to hopefully go into camp. So I'm really excited to see what they're doing and catch up with the guys. Because again, I haven't, everyone's back in pre-season now. So all my rugby friends are kind of working hard. So I don't know what they think following me on social media, where like 1 minute I'm DJing at Rolls Royce. Next minute I'm in Ibiza. The next minute I'm sort of somewhere else. So I think they, you know, I think obviously retirement probably looks like it's more fun than it is. But I think England, you know, for me, can go on and win the World Cup. I'm really excited about it. I think hopefully, you know, we get behind them like we did with the cricket and everything else, and maybe it's coming home. Who knows what the story is? But I believe England can go and do it, and I think that's why retiring was so much harder for me, because I genuinely believe that there's a good chance of winning it. And I think you know, hopefully I'm close enough. If they do win, I can still cash in. But like, I was sort of there. I played 3.5 years, just missed out on the important bit.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think, you know, I'd love them to see them do it. I think Eddie Jones's coaching staff are brilliant. I think the players are awesome. So I'm very excited about kind of the World Cup. I mean, the first 2 weeks I'm in the Maldives. Like at a 6-star hotel, commenting for the guests on the World Cup.
Hollywood James, man.
It's the best gig. I put it up, and lads are right. Just going, fuck off, mate. That can't be real. That can't be real. I went, yeah. Soniva Fushi, I'm going to. And yeah, I've got to commentate and then hopefully go out to Japan after that. But nice. If not, that's not a bad intro for 2 weeks.
It's not bad. Will you be able to get involved in any of the drills if you get down to camp and help out a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I think they wanted me to DJ maybe for them during the workout after in strength sessions, and then maybe do a session with a back row in the morning. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Listen, when Eddie calls, you just do what he tells you to do. Fair enough. He just says, he's like, mate, do you want to come to camp? I was like, yep, sir. Yeah. You know, and then he's put his kind of other guys in charge of trying to sort it out. But I think it's a combination of DJing, coaching, shit chatting. I don't know, mate. Who knows what it could be?
On that note, mate, I've got to leave on a high, mate. Thanks very much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sick. Cheers for coming down. Cheers, then, mate.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.